Hello, and welcome to Roll for Topic, a roundtable discussion about topics related to running role-playing games. I'm Chris Salzman.
And I'm Andy Rao.
Andy, just to show you how cool I am, I opened up my laptop to start recording this and realized that I had the Wikipedia page for the Eternal Champion pulled up from the Moorcox, Elric, and, well, other multiverse stuff.
Obviously.
Yeah, and I think I do have you to blame because you had posted in our Discord that they are Goodman Games just bought the Elric exclamation point license.
Yes.
License. Yeah, because there was an old game, you know, based on the Elric novels, and yeah, so we were all kind of speculating what they were going to do with it, and so of course I had to go brush up on my Eternal Champion knowledge.
Obviously, yes. Yeah. So yeah, that's pretty big news, mm-hmm. And I did read that they're releasing that jointly for their Dungeon Crawl Classics and 5e. So,
Nice. Yeah, this is, to me, it's like, you know, like as we're kind of strip mining any IP from the olden days to make, you know, various HBO series and stuff, I'm surprised that there has not been a swing for some sort of big budget Elric, like, adaptation. Because it's like, I mean, it would be pretty edgy. Like, it's pretty, you know, he's a giant edgelord. But, like, I think there's a lot of, like, fun stuff in those books. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. And, I mean, granted, Elric has never been Lord of the Rings popular. Mm-hmm. But I would say it has had a consistent, like, lower tier level of interest that has just never gone away and has stayed quietly influential.
Yeah.
It is kind of weird. Do you think that, you know, do you think that Game of Thrones and stuff were all tapped out of like grim, dark fantasy, or do you think there's space for it?
Yeah, that's a good. I mean, I am not a TV executive. I would have to imagine there's always capacity for people to be depressed about their fantasy out there. Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, like Game of Thrones, I bounced off of very hard. It's just kind of not for me. But I'm led to believe that there's like some sort of spinoff that's happening right now that people are enjoying quite a bit. But I mean, I think just like, I mean, to me, like those novels really embody this sort of like dark fantasy approach to world building that I think just like lends itself well to these fantastic images.
Yeah.
But I just think about like, I mean, even like the Court of Melnibody, we're not going to get into the argument about how to pronounce that, but you know, like Elric's court, like, you know, they're, you know, they've just got all these like, you know, people who are basically like doomed to just like sing, right? You know, like up in the rafters and stuff.
Yeah.
Right. Like, it's just like, there's all this like stuff that I think would play really well on screen. Like, play well as in that, like, oh, like this is a really cool and evocative place and setting and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think the right, you know, a movie approach to Elric would be a really colorful, really visually extravagant experience, mm-hmm. in a way that, you know, your Lord of the Rings and Game of Thrones and Wheel of Times are not, right?
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Okay.
You know, my mind goes like, to do it right, you know, I'm reaching for directors that have a flair for kind of out there fantasy, like Guillermo del Toro. I'm not saying his style is quite the right match for Elric, but you would need like kind of an outsider approach.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. Yeah, because I think it could be pretty drab if given, you know, given to kind of the wrong director.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, like, it's setting aside maybe like the movie adaptation a little bit. Like, one thing that we were talking about in Discord when you brought it up was just like, you don't, if you're going to play, I think like you're doing a movie of that. Sure. Yeah. You want to follow Elric and his exploits. If you're playing a tabletop game, you probably don't want to be Elric in that universe, right? Like, you want to be like, yeah, some sort of side quest or like some sort of like side character, right, in that universe. Because I think like, yeah, it's almost like he's almost like too powerful, there's almost too much plot armor or something around him.
Yeah.
So I mean, like, thinking about it set in the DCC universe, right, like, yeah, like you, Elric would be some sort of like, he'd be the big bad guy, or or some sort of patron or something like that, versus the person that you're playing.
My mind goes to the old Middle Earth role-playing game from the 80s. Mm-hmm. And I've always felt that showed an approach to licensed settings, especially licensed settings that already have big heroes who already told the biggest story that's possible in the setting. Mm-hmm. It's an approach that licensed games like the Dune or the Alien RPGs don't do today. And that is, that game was more interested in like, hey, would you like to play D&D, but you would like to explore with the D&D game you already know the setting of Middle Earth. Mm-hmm. It was not saying, hey, do you want to be Frodo and Sam and Aragorn going on an epic quest? And the game you design is really different if your game is going to emulate you are Elric, you're essentially invincible. Mm-hmm. You're this force of, you know, primordial chaos just careening through the world, right?
Yeah.
That's one type of game. Another type of game is like, oh yeah, Elric is out there somewhere. You are everybody else in this setting. Like you're the regular people that have to go to work and deal with the bandit problem down the road. Yeah. And maybe every now and then you catch like a distant glimpse of what Elric and his buddies are up to, but this isn't you, you know? So I'm curious what they do with it. Cause you know, as you know, the DCC world is very much like you're a level zero peasant. You have 3 hit points. If a cat scratches you, that you're toast.
Yes.
You know, that's very different than, you know, that's very different than Elric.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, I mean, yeah, it's almost the more interesting role to play is, I mean, I feel like, is it Elric that has, like they have these like gigantic golden warships that they made out of gold, right? It'd be fun to be like play a party of like the, you know, the shipsmiths, right? Like the people making those.
And even those, I think they're giant like floating golden pyramids.
Yes,
like they're not like normal ships.
It's something absolutely
so serious. Like that movie done faithfully and right would be wild, like,
yeah, because every time there'd be a new scene, you'd be like, no, surely that's not
right.
But, yeah,
so here's a gaming question about this sort of thing.
Yeah.
So congrats to Goodman Games for getting the license. I'm glad to see Elric represented in the world of RPGs.
Mm-hmm.
That said, Elric has already massively influenced a lot of RPGs. It's probably the most important influence on Dungeons and Dragons itself. Going back to the early editions in particular, and that the stuff cited in Appendix N. It's clear Gygax had a real love for Moorcock's writing, more so than Tolkien and stuff. And since then, we've had this, you know, old school revival or renaissance, and there's approximately 342 million role-playing games out there that swing for this gonzo vibe that the world of Elric has.
Yeah.
So this isn't me being snarky about an Elric RPG, but it is a legitimate question. We are already doing Elric in RPGs. Is there something to you, like what would make you buy the Elric RPG when on your shelf you probably have 15 games that are explicitly inspired by Elric and explicitly trying to emulate some aspect of, you know, Moorcock's worlds? It's a non-snarky question. What would make you pick up that game?
That is a super good question. I mean, I think for me, and this gets back to something that, you know, the Splatbook podcast used to talk about a lot, like, and John Corey does in particular, about like when you're playing a game, you're really trying to play sort of a genre of fiction. Like you're all sort of like agreeing like, oh, I want to play this kind of game, this kind of game together. So I think for me, like picking up that, like an Elric RPG, like I would love to get you and John and like, you know, someone else who's read way too many Moorcock books, you know, like get them all together and like say like, oh, we are going to play, and like it's going to be ridiculous, like you are going to at some point, you know, have to like, you know, pledge your fealty to some sort of like chaos god, and like there's going to be a talking sword that's like cursed, and like, you know, just like all those sort of like those greatest hits of, to me, the stuff that's really interesting about Elric, and like, you know, the Eternal Champion, right? You're going to have like, you know, we'll have Elric and there'll be some sort of like companion and like, you know, all that sort of stuff where it's just like, yeah, you can get that other places. But I think that the combination of all of that, and then also getting to kind of play your own version of like one of those stories. Cause like, I mean, Moorcock talked about this too, but like those books are written at a cadence, right? Like there's a pure formula that he's following for those, and he can crank them out in like a week, right? Like there it's not like, it's like a comforting, it's almost like I don't know, like a serialized television show, right? It's like there is that cadence to it, and like that's honestly how I'd probably even structure a short campaign of it. Just like, you know, we're just gonna kind of follow the arc of like one of these books, right, where it's a few short stories sort of strung together. But yeah, I mean, I think for me, like that would be the draw of it. Like, can that system really capture the feel of reading one of these things in like an afternoon, right? When you're just like kind of tearing through it, and it's just like, oh, let's see the wacky exploits that Elric gets up to. we know he's not going to die. He's always going to be close to death, but like he's going to get out of it in the end.
Yeah. See, that's fascinating. And obviously, I mean, there's a lot of personal taste involved here, but you know, what I kind of hear you saying is we don't want a game that's like, here's the stats for all of the places and people in Elric's world.
No,
we want a game that captures the feeling we had when we were reading those stories.
Mm-hmm.
So all props. I love Goodman Games. They're a great company. I'm sure their book's going to be lovely and look great.
Yeah.
However, if it is pretty much just like, hey, now you can play 5e or DCC, but you're in the world of Elric, to me, I don't want to say it's a missed opportunity, but that's not the way it would get me excited about buying it, I guess. I thought about this with, you know, I've run the Alien RPG a bunch, and why did I... You know, why did I spend $50 or whatever? It's probably like $80.
It was more than $50.
Yeah, I just lowballed it in case my wife is listening to this podcast. Why did I spend all that money on that Kickstarter when I have in my house like literally 15 games that I wouldn't even need to change any details to run Alien? I could just pick them up and run Alien, right?
Yes,
like straight. They probably have actual stats for like an off-brand Alien in the bestiary section. Like, but I did. I picked up the Alien games and I had a blast playing Alien. And I guess I probably would have had a blast to playing the exact same scenario with Mothership or Traveler or something, but I didn't.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, like having played that with you, I think that system tried to do something unique with it. Right. And tried to match like the cinematic feel of it, which like that's sort of the core essence of like what, I don't know, what's interesting, like what makes you go see the next Alien movie. Right. It's like, you know, I saw like Alien Romulus, right, in the theaters like recently. It's like, great time, great movie, you know, but like, you know, functionally the story beats were pretty similar to all the other, you know, like all the other good Alien movies, but it's like, like that's what I want to, like, you kind of want to bask in that a little bit, you know. It's like, and if it, but if it wasn't called Alien Romulus, it was called something else, like it just like it wouldn't hit quite the same.
Yeah.
And maybe that's really petty. And like, maybe it's just like, oh, well, we're just so used to identifying with brands that you can't escape it. But I think there is also just something like this is comforting, like this is like entertaining in a way.
By the way, I've talked to the person you saw Alien Romulus with, and he has a funny story about watching it with you.
Okay.
He thought you had never seen an Alien movie before.
I remember this.
So he told me he was like leaning over and whispering in your ear to explain all of the mechanics of the Alien to you, thinking you had. So how long did that go on before you were like, I've actually seen this?
It wasn't too bad, but there was a woman who was like, that's the Nostromo. I'm like, okay, well, I mean, I remember that bit.
That's great.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, I mean, we will, you know, be watching that space for the Elric RPG, because I think that is one that I might grab just for pure nostalgia reasons.
And the right art, you know, the right art and stuff in that book might make it a like good coffee table type of purchase. Yes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So one other thing I wanted to bring up, because I know we're gonna have to cut it off pretty soon, because we got kind of we're both cramming this in between some meetings and stuff. But so I read and finished the book The Prestige by Christopher Priest, I think. Yeah. It was just absolutely incredible. I mean, it's like, you know, of course I'm thinking about it somewhat in terms of gaming, but also just like from the standpoint of like a really good, I guess I would call it a sci-fi, maybe a fantasy novel, just phenomenal. Like maybe one of my all-time books.
Hey, books that's so lovely. It's a fantastic book. I'm so glad you liked it.
Yeah, it was really cool. I mean, the structure of it is really fascinating. And just the story itself too. It's like, the movie is great. Like the movie's really good. The book is leaps and bounds better. Like, you know, and
agreed.
That is quite a feat, I think, to pull off. I mean, it's a book that is about sort of magic and magicians and stuff, like in the real world, right, and like how you might pull off these different tricks. And there's just a lot of like, you know, deep sort of ruminations about like, you know, like what makes a trick and like you know, all that. So of course, I mean, it has me thinking about like, you know, magic in our like magic systems that you use in tabletop games too. It's like, I don't know, like I think a lot about, I mean, like most people who've read The Lord of the Rings, it's like, like Gandalf has like such immense power, but like he never uses it, right? You're just always like, well, why doesn't he just cast more spells?
Yeah, yeah.
Spells and stuff. But I mean, also like then, you know, like, I don't know, like reading this book about magicians and stuff, you're just like, it doesn't take a lot to like, you know, feel otherworldly, right? Like, and like, it's not something you necessarily would need some sort of like actual magic to do, in some ways. It's just like, you know, it's an understanding of the process and people's perception and things like that. Yeah. Anyway, all that to say, I mean, I think the next time I play a game where there's, you know, prestidigitation is available to you as like little like sleight of hand tricks and stuff, it's like, it really just has me sort of thinking about that in a different way.
You might find it interesting to go check out the old White Wolf game from the 90s, Mage the Ascension.
Ooh. Okay.
It's not like Prestige the RPG in any way, but it's all about doing magic in a modern world of disbelief and disguising your magic as something other than magic. It's not exactly the theme of the Prestige, but if you haven't looked at that, it is kind of a classic RPG.
Yeah.
You know, it's I don't know if it's still around anymore or not, but it is one of the more interesting spins on like an RPG that thinks about magic in the modern world a little bit more than like, hey, we're playing D&D, except it's 1995.
Yeah.
You know, that's great. Yeah. You should, I mean, we can talk about this off the air, but you should read more Christopher Priest. If you liked it that much, you have, it's great news because he has a pretty big body of work, and I've never read one I didn't enjoy. So,
yeah, I did note when I looked up his Wikipedia page, I think he wrote the Short Circuit novelization.
Did he really?
That's he's got a couple of those projects sort of in the back of his
I love learning that stuff. That reminds me of learning that Jeff Vandermeer, he wrote the Area X novel, and some of my other I love his work. Yeah, he wrote a Predator novelization back like in his early career, and he said, you know, he mostly was just writing a straight Predator book because he's being paid some tiny amount of money to do.
Yeah.
But he posted some quote. It was like just out of, you know, this weird segment that if you had been reading it as a Predator fan, you'd be like, what's happening? Like,
anyway. Yes, that's awesome. I love it. Yeah. Cool. All right. So right before we wrap up, I did want to ask you about your Band of Blades game. So I think it might've been last time or the time before we talked about you putting together this Band of Blades game. What's going on with that?
Yeah. Well, what's going on with that is I am in a place that I hope that you and our listeners can relate to, which is, like GMing limbo. So here is where you and I have talked about the difficulties of scheduling games with adults. And it took quite a while, you know, months, not weeks, to set up a first game date for Band of Blades.
Yes.
That's fine. That's great. Everyone's super busy. I get it. I can't tell you how frustrating it was that I had to be the one to say,
oh, no.
I can't make this date that we all spent 2.5 months like wrangling with our calendars to make. Yeah. So, yeah, I had a family thing come up that required travel, and it was just impossible for me to make it. That was a week or so ago, and I just haven't figured out how to reach out. I haven't emailed the group yet to say, I hope that I didn't just torpedo the momentum.
I'm sure you didn't. People understand.
And I also hope that this doesn't mean we won't be able to meet till like September or something like that, because, so I need to email everyone. I mean, I apologize that I had to call off the game. I need to email everyone and say, hey, I would love to not let my scheduling snafu screw up our momentum.
That's a particular kind of like awful feeling of like there's finally a date and then
I've rolled my eyes at players that are hard to schedule and stuff like that, and then I felt like I had to eat a big
to you.
a heaping helping of humble pie. I'm the problem, it was me. So,
yes, yeah, I suspect it'll be okay. Yeah, people are generally
I think so too, and I haven't touched the book. I mean, I had been spending a lot of time in the book and planning, and I haven't touched it since I had to cancel. So I need to get over myself a little bit, and like if I can't recapture the momentum, I can't ask my players to do it. So. So yeah, that'll be the project for my, you know, the rest of this week.
Yeah, so. Totally. I mean, then it is a project. I think, like, we've talked about it in the past, and I become more and more convinced about this, that there's scheduling is really like a three-part process, usually, of like, you have to decide who is interested in scheduling the thing. And then you have to have a conversation about the first date that you're going to pick. And then there's the second date when someone has to cancel. And like recognizing that has made me a lot calmer about scheduling in general. Like, yeah, we're kind of working on some of our summer plans too. And we ran into this exact thing of like, you know, like, so we'd finally picked a date, gotten everything squared away. And this one was like, actually I need to change it. Right. And like, this is for like a trip. Right. So it's like, it's a little harder, but I'm like, you know what? It's fine. Like, that's just, it's part of life.
Yep. I was doing things smarter this time than I have in the past. Mm-hmm. Like, so this time I had a policy set of like how many people can be missing before we call off a game. Cause I know people will get sick or that, you know, something comes up and they'll email, you know, an hour before and say, I'm sorry, I can't make it.
Yeah.
I've been the person doing that email. So I get it. But I was all set. I had, you know, I even like, this is going to be our policy. This is how many blah, blah, blah. It's going to be so good. It's going to happen. Anyway, so maybe that will still happen. And you can ask me on the next episode. If I haven't gotten this sorted out by our next episode, you can scold me from one GM to the other on air.
What we'll do on air is make you pull up your email.
That's right. We'll actually call out from the podcast to my players and try to sort this out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, we got to wrap it up, but thanks, Andy. This has been good. Let's see. Yeah. You can go listen to Andy with John Corey over on Zombie Strains. Go find that. That's good. I think, let's see what John just mentioned somewhere that you guys are doing. Is it Night of the Living Dead soon?
It is. So this is our biggest milestone so far with the Zombie Streams podcast. We're about 50 or 60 movies in, about 30 years into the history of zombie films. And we are finally at really the movie that inspired us to do this, which is Night of the Living Dead. So when this comes out, I think you'll have a week or two and then our Night of the Living Dead episode will land. So you know,
that's super cool. And I just want to note for everybody that the movie you will have done before that is can't even get up there, is Dr. Satan versus Black Magic.
Yes.
So just to give you a sense of what was happening in the late 1960s.
I was emailing a friend recently and I was telling him that, you know, Zombie Strains is going well. And I said, but I will say that the number of bad movies I've seen in the last year and a half has ruined any ability I have to gauge the quality of a film. Like it's like so.
Yeah. Night of the Living Dead is probably just like, it feels like a cinematic masterpiece, which I mean, it, you know, it's good, but yeah.
Well, it has a Criterion Collection release. Yeah. I think it might be the second movie we've watched in 30 years of zombie cinema that anyway, but that you can, wonderful. You didn't fire up this podcast to hear me talk about zombies.
No, that's so good. Yeah. Please go check out Zombie Strains. But okay. That will do it for us. I've been Chris Salzman.
I've been Andy Rao.
And remember, if your players are having fun, you're a great GM.